in the month of October, in the year 2002, and tonight is already Yud Aleph, in the month of Cheshvan, Tavshin Samach Gimel, and we are ready to complete tonight, first of all, the third chapter of Maseches Megillah, starting on Daf Chof Hei, Amen Aleph, towards the bottom of the page, starting with the new Mishnah. Okay? Before we start the new Mishnah, we have to tie it in with the previous Mishnah, okay? Previous Mishnah, the Gemara, if you remember, spoke about the rejection of different things because of the fact that we might suspect them of heresy, okay? Right. Like, for example, if a guy gets up to Davin and he says, Moidim, Moidim, instead of simply Moidim and Achdullah, so we say that's bad business. Why? Because it would seem that he is giving thanks to two different powers, okay? Yeah. And as I explained to you,
stutters.
Too. Huh?
He stutters.
Okay, in that case, we'd forgive him.
No, he doesn't.
We'd forgive him. What? Okay. There's no prohibition against it. Unless a person feels for himself, you know, that he's not capable of
doing it. Stutterer doesn't appear to words, he appears synonymous with
the right. The explanation is that it would seem that you are giving praise to two different powers, to Hashem and to another one, right. Two different ones, right. Yeah, well, right. Right, okay. Moshe Rabbeinu said that. Okay. Right. Now, I pointed out last week, too, that, for example, the Jews who lived in Babylonia, which was actually governed by the Persians at that time believed in religion which is called Zoroastrianism. And there, definitely, this was a religion that subscribed to two different gods. One was the god of light, who was the god of goodness, right? And the other was the god of darkness, who was the god of evil. They worshipped both of them, okay? So, okay. This may also account why, for example, Yeshayahu speaks, you know, about the Yotzer Or of Ori Choshech, right? Oser Shalom. And actually, the conclusion of the pasuk over there is Ori Ra. And he wanted to point out that Hashem is the author of everything, and that there are not two different gods. Of course, we learned in Gemara and Brachas that they modified the last one to make it Es Hakol instead of Ori Ra, because we don't want to have a bad word. Is there? We're going to see.
End it on a bad word.
I've got to ask you a question.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with what you're saying now.
Yeah.
What is the Hebrew word for evil?
Evil? Ra.
Yeah.
Ra is bad.
Yeah, no.
You want to say an evil person, you say a
Russia.
Yeah.
But how is it different from a bad person?
Adam Ra, you can say Adam Russia, you can say evil one. Right. Russia has the implication of wicked, at
wicked,
least.
Yeah.
It seems to be a little bit stronger than simply Ra. Right.
How about Ma'od?
Ra Ma'od. Well, Ra Ma'od, yeah. Okay.
How can you say after most anything?
But it doesn't have the same connotation that the word, the English word evil has. When you say something is evil.
Yeah, evil implies that it's stronger than just that. I understand.
Right, exactly.
And so maybe Russia would be a little bit closer to that.
But that refers to person, Russia.
Yeah, right.
But I'm talking about evil
and the situation as bad as Ra.
In the Shachas, after the Brochus, after the ten Brochus, you go a little further, Odebar, Chogara, Shogara, it's all evil people.
Yeah, right. Okay, we understand. Right.
That every morning, I know that.
Yeah, right. Okay.
All kinds of things evil.
All right.
Let's get back to the text, please. Thank you. Okay. At any rate, so we saw also, for example, we had a case where if a person got up and he said, I'm only going to daven in colored clothing, so we say, even in white clothes, or I won't daven in them.
Right.
In other words, again, we suspect that there's something that's a little bit
so
crazy.
Forth.
Right, right. If he says that he won't daven wearing sandals, then he says even if you wear shoes, you can't daven.
Right.
Because we are suspicious of what's going on. Okay. So, yes.
We finished that subject.
What? The word for mixed multitude is called Eva. Yeah, that's Erev Ra. Erev Ra. Okay. Okay.
Right.
And anyway, so now tonight, the concluding Mishnah that we have deals with, first of all, things that we suspect that it's not proper to translate these particular things. Some things may be translated, some things may not be translated. Read in Hebrew, because after all, reading the entire Torah, right? But there are sections in the Torah, or even in the Nevi'im and the Ksuvim and so on, where also a change is made. So we'll see. The Mishnah will talk for itself, and the Gemara goes into it in further
detail.
Why
we can't say those things, why we can't repeat them?
Well,
okay.
Here, no, this is not a repetition. This is translation.
Translation
for the people, okay?
Targum,
right. Okay. So the Mishnah begins by saying, Ma'ase Ru'uvein Nikra V'lo B'Targum. That the story that we read in Bereshis about Ruvein, I don't know if you remember, but there's a little statement, you know, that it's written over there, not by Yishkov. It's Bilho, you know, Pelegish, Yaakov,
yeah,
and so on. So they say this. It's a good question. I mean, we read it, but it's the kind of thing that you don't want to do it. Why? We'll discover. Because they want to maintain the reputation of Reuven, because we'll see. He did, sure. Okay. And then Masay Tamar. This is, we find in the story in the Shmuel Beis over there, where King David had different children, okay, including a daughter by the name of Tamar and a son by the name of Amnon, and Amnon lusted for her. According to the Gemara, she was a Fastor, her mother was not Jewish to begin with, and so that name, because
he was, that was sister and brother.
They were sister and brother. More correctly, they were half sister and half brother.
Yeah.
All right.
Sister was a Yehuda.
Huh?
Rashi says Tom was a Yehuda.
Well, did I skip or something? Oh, Masay Tamar. Right. No, I was thinking already ahead. Sorry. My apologies. I thought you were right. Here, the Tamar that we're talking about is the story about Tamar and Yehuda that we find in Horatius. Right, where she disguised herself as a harlot because she saw that, Yehuda was not giving her to one of his sons in marriage. Okay,
right.
Okay. That is correct. Okay. Afterwards, we'll read about Amnon and Tamar. That's the reason why I'm running ahead myself. Okay. So at any rate, here it says that this story, Masay Tamar, Nikra Umitarge. You are allowed to not only read it, but you are allowed to translate this one. Okay.
Yehuda?
Yeah, Tamar and Yehuda, right. Masay Egel Harishon, Nikra Mitargem, Vahasheni Nikra Velo Mitargem. Now, the story about the Egel HaZohav actually has different elements in it. First of all, as we know, Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Mount Sinai after the beginning of the Ten Commandments, right? He was there 40 days, 40 nights, and he came down. And then, of course, he saw that the people were dancing around the golden calf that had been made. Okay, so that, it says, should be read and should be translated, okay? But the Hasheni, this is where Aaron, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu then turns to Aaron and says, what the heck happened? What did you do? So Aaron came and he tells, well, I'll tell you, I was afraid the people, you know, that they would kill him and so forth. So, and therefore, you know, so I threw the gold into the fire, and lo and behold, you know what happened?
Yeah.
This eagle jumped forth from it. Okay, okay. So this is not to be translated. Okay? Birkas Kohanim, the bracha, you know, that the Kohanim give you, Recha Shem Recha, and so on. or Maasei David V'Yavnon, this is where we have this, the David and Amnon, Nikra Yin V'lo Mitargimin. Neither of these, they are read, but they are not to be translated. And then, as far as Haftorahs are concerned, the Mishnah quotes, a Matirim B'Mer Kova, that we are not to read as a maftir the first chapter of the book of Ezekiel, where he sees, you know, he talks about his heavenly vision of the chariots and the wheels that were spinning around and so on and so forth, right? And Rabbi Yehuda Matir, he gives permission that it could be read. Of course, we'll know that today we actually do read it, because we always read it the first day of Shavuos. So in this particular case, we can say we're following Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Maftirim Behudas Yerushalayim. Rabbi Eliezer says that we do not read as Haftorah a chapter in the book of Ezekiel where he lists all the faults of Yerushalayim, all the sins that have been committed, and so on and so forth. You know, Hodas Yerushalayim means make known unto Jerusalem all the sins that you have committed, and he goes into a whole list of different things, you know, that shows how they did wrong in one way and another way, and so on and so forth. So Rabbi Eliezer feels that that is not a subject which is fit as a Haftorah reading. Okay. I have to say that in those days, the Haftorahs are not necessarily coordinated with the Sedras the way they are today. Today, if we'll take a look, in almost every case, almost everyone, there is something in the Torah passage which relates to the Haftorah itself. For example, if we take the very first Haftorah, which is the one for Shabbos Bereishis, this year we didn't read it because it was Malchut Chodesh, the following day. But there it begins by with the selection taken from Yeshayahu, which says, you know, thus saith the Lord, you know, who created heaven and earth, okay, which my Lord's, and so on. Well, obviously, you see how it fits in with Bereishis, okay? Last Shabbos, when we read Parsha Noach, what was the Haftorah? Kimei Noach Zosli. We have in the middle of the Haftorah the verse that just as in the days of Noah, this is that when I made a promise, you know, that I would never again bring a flood to destroy the world, and so on. Okay. So we usually find something in the Haftorah which is related to something in the Torah reading. But don't forget, this is all fixed right now. Okay. Of course, we also have special occasions for Haftorahs, and the Gemara will go into it towards the end of this new chapter that will start, where they deal with, for example, the business about the four parshios, you know, that we have before Purim, before Pesach, and so on and so forth. Okay, so that already became an established practice, and of course, you know, we also have, you know, for holidays, what exactly is the Haftorah read on this day of the holiday, and the other day of the holiday, and so on and so forth. Okay, so in those days, obviously, they were freer in that maybe that they could choose anyone, because first of all, the Torah reading itself, as I explained to you, while in Babylonia there arose the custom, you know, of doing the entire Torah in the course of 1 year, just as we do to this very day, but in Eretz Yisrael, many communities still had the business of like a triennial cycle, okay? So it's just, you know, for holidays, there they would have to have special readings, and also to have Haftorahs which would fit in with the particular holiday event. Otherwise, apparently, they were freer to choose what section they wanted to read. Because otherwise, I mean, we would never read Hodas Yerushalayim as a normal rule, okay? Don't want to read, we have enough Tzoras that are listed in the Tokicha. So to start it to add to it, you know, he felt it was not right. Okay. At any rate, now the Gemara wants to explain a little bit more. And first of all, the Gemara says as follows. It says, Tanu Rabbanan, right, our sages taught us, Yesh Nikrin Metagimin, we have passages in the Bible which are read and which we translate. Yesh Nikrin Velo Metagimin. And as the Mishnah said, then we also have passages which are read, but they are not translated. And then it says, V'yesh lo nikrin, v'lo mitargimin. Okay? And we also have sections that are never read and never translated, okay? Now, that obviously has nothing to do with Torah reading for us in public, but it has to do with the fact, you know, that whatever it is, I felt it was not a proper passage in order to read or to translate, okay? And then the Gemara begins by saying, you know, as what the Mishnah said, Elo Nikrinu Mitargimin. The following are read, and we do translate the reading. Okay? We skip the notes over here and continue with the second to the last word on the second line from the bottom. Maaseh Bereishis. First of all, the story of the creation of the world, right? Nikra Metargim. We read it, and we also translated. So the Gemara says, Pshuta, is it this obvious? Should we be doing it? Of course, right? So what objection could there be? So he says, Mahu de Tamar. What if we should say that also the Shiyule, that people, when they hear about the creation of the world, they're starting to ask kashas, they're going to ask questions. Mala mala, mala mata, what's above the world, what's below the world? And the next page. Yeah, here we are. Malifonim, what happened before the creation of the world?
Right,
the Maliochor, what happened after the world, in other words, after this world, what's going to be the end, what will be the result in that particular case. So, if that's the case, we don't want to indulge in this kind of speculation, which may be dangerous to what? May be dangerous to faith, you understand? So that's the reason why some said we should read it, but not translate it. However, the Gemara says, no, we're not worried about that. It's more important that people should read it, and they should know about how the world was created, okay? So Kamash Malon, therefore, we learn that we do read it and we do translate it. Okay. Next. Then we had another passage which is not mentioned in the Mishnah itself. It says, Maaseh Lot Ushtei Benosof. All right? If you remember the story of Lot, who after the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, right, he escaped and, you know, helped by the angels to escape, right? And he stayed in a cave. And his daughters, and the daughters said, well, there isn't a man left in the world, and therefore, right, we should have, right, yeah. Okay? Yes, Ammon and Moab were born from this union. Okay? So, Nikra Metargim. So, again, we say that we do read, and we also translate the story. So, again, the same question is asked, Pshita, isn't this obvious that we should be doing it? It says, no. Mahu the tema, what if we say as follows? Nichush dechlode d'Avraham, that we are concerned about the honor to Abraham, kamash malon, therefore we learn that nevertheless we do read it. Once you say, what is the relationship? Remember that Lot was the nephew of Avraham. So, if, in other words, we read about this nasty incident that took place, it would be a reflection on Avraham, and we say, nevertheless, we do read it. And we do translate it, okay? Then the next area is Maaseh Tamar v'Yehuda, okay? The story about Tamar and Yehuda. They didn't mention Yehuda before in the Mishnah notes, but here it's mentioned, okay? Okay, so what about the story about Tamar and Yehuda? So again, it's Nikra u'Mitargim, right? It is read and it's also translated. And again, what objection could there be? Pshita, isn't this obvious? So he says, Mahu the Tema, what if we should say, Lichush Lichloida de Yehuda, that we should be concerned about the honor and the reputation of Yehuda, you know, the fact that, you know, he got involved in something like this. So, Kamash Malon, so from this we learn that Shivcha Yehu, that actually praise is given to Yehuda, why? The Odi, because he confessed his sin, Remember? I mean, we had this also in Soto. He said, what? Sot called the many. She is more righteous than I am. Right. Right. So, because he recognized that he had sinned and she was really more righteous than he, right. So, for that reason, that's why we read it too, in order to teach us the importance of confessing our sins and doing tshuva. Okay.
And he also took responsibility for the child.
Yes, of course, obviously. Right.
What?
He took responsibility for the children. Yes, of course. I mean, Peres and Zerach, they became families listed in the genealogies of the tribe of Yehuda. Yeah. And not only that, but what is the genealogy of King David?
It
comes from Peres, right?
From
Peres. Right. Then, Masay Egel Harishon Nikrom Targum. In other words, the first part of the story about the golden calf, we read it and we translate it. Pshita, again, the question is, maybe because it reflects badly upon the people of Israel, we should not translate it. So therefore we learn, nevertheless, it should be read and it should be translated. Okay?
The whole thing is about translating or not translating. Obviously, those who read and understand, they know the story.
Yeah.
So the whole point was that those who, the multitudes, don't have to know it. Is that sort of the multitudes, so to say?
Well,
we
have to assume that there were some people who were not educated, that they couldn't follow the Hebrew, okay? Yeah, okay. Obviously, for their benefit, this is why there was a Targum. Okay. Right. Well, we have Chumashim, of course, with English translations and with footnotes and everything else. I mean, to try to. Chumash Malon, therefore, it teaches us.
It's like abbreviation.
Yes. Ka. Not to be translated. Mashba.
Mashba means
it. The teaching is lan unto us. In other words, we therefore learn that this is the way it should be. Okay, yeah, kamashba. You got to get used to Aramaic.
It's
Aramaic.
We use it a lot in Yiddish, you know.
Sure, absolutely. It's a famous song. My kamash balon de regen. What is the meaning of the rain? And so on.
Sounds like musk.
Right. Okay. And in connection with that, the Gemara continues over here to say, kol shechein the nichalu. All the more reason that we should read it and translate the story about the first, you know, the incident of the golden calf, because in the final analysis, the Havilahu Kapora, eventually what happened, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam gave atonement to the people of Israel for the sin that they had committed. Of course, this is one of the themes, according to tradition, when they started to count, you know, when the Torah was given on Mount Sinai, okay? The sixth of Sivan, okay? And then you count 40 days that Moshe Rabbeinu was up on the mountain, came down, and when did he come down? It was the 17th of Tammuz. It wasn't with Tammuz, okay? So at that point he broke the tablets, right? And the Rabbeinu Shel Olam told him to go up again to the mountain, right? So he went up again for 40 days, and still, anyway, that brings you to the beginning of Elul, okay? And then you count the second 40 days, the next group of 40 days that he was down, where he received a new set of Ten Commandments, new tablets of the Ten Commandments. So he came down, when did he come down? He came down on Yom Kippur. So this is how they figure it out, okay? And therefore, the very fact that he now came down with a new set of Ten Commandments shows that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam had forgiven the sins of the people of Israel, and therefore this is one of the reasons why the 10th day of Tishrei, you know, is Yom Kippur. Day of Atonement. Yeah, all right. I mean, look, you can criticize Aaron, but nevertheless, at the same time. All right. He still has the reputation of being the great peacemaker, if you know. Okay? And this is why Hillel said, Hadeim et Talmidov shel Aaron, right? You should be a disciple of Aaron. Ohev shalom, lover of peace. Rodev shalom, pursuing peace, right? Ohev es habrios, love your fellow human beings. Korban haTorah, and try to bring them closer to the Torah. Okay? Okay. Then, the next thing that the Gemara mentions that should be read and translated is Klalos of Brachos. Now, actually, we have, of course, different sets of Klalos of Brachos, in other words, curses and blessings. It's what we call the Teichacho, and of course, the Teichacho is repeated twice. We find Teichacho, first of all, at the end of Sefer Vayikra, right? And then we find that there's another Teichacho in Sefer Devarim, which is, you know, close to the end, right? Parsha Kisavo, okay? So, why shouldn't we read about these different things? So he says, Pshita, right? It shouldn't be obvious that we should do it. He says, Mahu Detema, what if you say, or what if you object, saying, Nichush, Dilma, Paiga, Detach, Detzibura, maybe when the people will hear it, they'll be filled with despair. Literally, their minds will be in a whirl, right? So, Komash Malon, therefore, we learn, right, that what? That we do read the Tochicha. And in general, the next phrase is, Azharos be Onshin, where we read that God says, you shouldn't do this or that, and we also mention what the punishment would be if we do that or that. Here that we're not talking about, what we call the Teichacho, but we're talking about in general. For example, let's take the the chapter of the Arroyos. Okay? Remember we discussed that last week. Arroyos says, you know, airbus this and that and so on, right? That you should not uncover the nakedness of father, mother, brother, sister, brother-in-law, sister-in-law, whatever it may be, and so on, right? You know, people are related to you, okay? And we do find not only, you know, the Azhoras, in other words, that the warnings given, but we also find in connection with that, that also punishment is mentioned. As for example, in most cases, punishment would be Kores, okay? Later on, there's another possibility that, you know, that it might be even a death penalty, of course, subject to all the, you know, the ins and the outs, you know. Right. But at any rate, so we say, maybe when we hear, you know, a commandment, and, you know, and then we hear what the punishment is going to be if we don't do it, so maybe we should not read it. We say, no, on the contrary, we have to read it, and we also have to translate it. We say, Pshita, isn't that obvious that we do have to do it? What is the objection? We are afraid maybe that people will come to observe God's commandments out of fear of God. So, Kamash Malon, therefore we learn. Of course, this brings us to the fact that we have different verses in the Torah, and of course that leads to, you know, our sages laying two different types of stress. One of them says, tira, right? That you are to literally fear the Lord your God, right? And then it says, Vyoso Savo, that you are to serve him, right? And so on and so forth. And then after that, it talks about the praise of those, you know, who observe God's commandments. So we are liable to think, according to this reasoning then, that we should not read the punishments because we leave people to feel that they have to serve God only out of fear, whereas what we want to do is to stress that we should love God, we should teach God, you know, just say, we're there, we stress that we have to love God, So that the sages say, you know, therefore, I mean, that there are two ways to observe for a religious person. He has to, you know, avot miyira, avot miyahava. You have to serve God both out of fear, but also out of love for him. Okay. Masay Amnon the Tamara. Now we come to Amnon and Tamara. Nikro umitargem. Okay? Why we read it and we also translate it. And again, what would be objection to it? Pshito. Right? It shouldn't be read, obviously. So it says, Mahu de Temo Likush Nikore de David. What if you argue that it reflects badly upon whom? Upon the upon King David, so that therefore, Kamashpul, nevertheless, we do it. Okay. Maase Pelegish Begiva. Oh, this is another terrible business. Pelegish Begiva. Literally, it means the concubine who lived in Giva. Giva was a place in Binyamin, Shevet Binyamin. Okay. And the story is told how a man came with his concubine over this, and suddenly we find it towards the end of the Book of Judges. Okay. And then they ravished the woman and killed her, okay? And so then the husband took her body and they cut it into pieces and they sent one piece of her to every tribe saying, take a look what they've done in the Shevet Binyamin. So the other tribes declared war against Binyamin and there was a civil war among the Jews. And finally it ended, you know. And first they wanted to boycott the tribe of Binyamin and throw them out. But eventually, as we learned actually in the Gemara in Sota towards the end over there, that eventually the sages decided, you know, that they gave permission to the tribes again to take women from the tribe of Binyamin and to marry with them, because the other tribes had declared a boycott, that they would refuse to marry, you know, intermarry into the tribe of Binyamin. So permission was finally given in order to do so. Okay? Sure. So at any rate, since it's a bad reflection upon the tribe of Binyamin, so maybe we should not read it, right? Mm-hmm. Okay? Yeah, the Pelegish Begiva, it's the first long line over here.
The first long line?
First long line. Yeah.
Oh,
Pelegish.
Oh,
right, you see it? Right? Line, right. So it's Tikkun Tang, the Tamil Rukhish, right? So Kamashpul, and therefore we do. Now, okay. How about Hoda Es Yerushalayim? That chapter taken from Yechezkel, when we say, make known in Jerusalem, unto Jerusalem, et Tarava, Seho, all the various horrible things, all the sins that have been committed in her, all the loathsome things. Nevertheless, Nikro Metargim, according to this, it is read and it is translated. And again, Shita, shouldn't this be Ivory? So we say, well, no, there's an objection. What is the objection? The objection is La Fuke Midarabi Eliezer. This would be in order to go against the teaching of Rabbi Eliezer. Who prohibited it, as we said in the Mishnah, and now they go into greater detail, you know, what was the prohibition? The Tanya. This prohibition is based upon an incident wherein Maase Biodamecha, there was a man who was Kore Lamala Rabbi Eliezer, he was reading the Bible. Of course, remember that this is the book of Yechezkel, right? And he was reading it. Literally it says above Rabbi Eliezer, but it means that Rabbi Eliezer simply was seated and he was reading it in the presence of Rabbi Eliezer. Okay? And he read, Hoda es Yerushalayim es Tohu Secha. So, Omar lo, so Rabbi Eliezer became incensed when he heard about all the bad things that Yechezkel had to say, right? And that was being read over there. And he said to him, Ad shato bodek besoevos Yerushalayim, while you are so busy looking for all the terrible things that Jerusalem has done, save Dokpetoy Vosimecha. Go and see the terrible things that your mother did. So, Botku Acharov, so they started to investigate, right? Umatsubo Shemes Pasom, they found that he had something that was not right. In other words, what? That he was a mamzer. This is the idea. In other words, a mamzer. He was a mamzer. He was an illegitimate child. Okay? So, we have to be careful. The Gemara, huh?
It said
puzzle. Puzzle means, yeah, puzzle. You have to explain. This, no. I'll tell you what this is based on. This is something that we learned in the Gemara Kedushin, in the very last chapter over there, when we studied Kedushin, that, you know, there are people who can marry and others who are not eligible to marry. Okay. Eligible to marry, of course, would be a Cain, Levi, Yisrael, okay? They're eligible. Who is not eligible to marry a Jew? The answer is a mamzer. Mamzer is not, okay? Now, of course, a mamzer has to, you know, we have to explain what is a mamzer. A mamzer is where the mother was never divorced. She was a married woman, never divorced, and she had relations with another man from whom she bore a child. That is a mamzer, okay? So, the mamzer, it's written, you know.
A man is married and a woman is single, is that also a
mamzer? Yeah, a man can also cause mamzeris, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. Right. Yes, absolutely.
Right,
okay. All right. Then, if you remember, the Gemara says, Ve'eda nikvun v'lo metargumin, right? But we also have passages that are read but not translated. And so the first one is Ma'asei Reuven. The story about, Reuven and Bilhah, right? Where it's written, Nikwa V'leimetargim. This, he says, is read, but it's not translated. However...
Why?
Why? Because it's a reflection upon Jacob, but Yaakov Avinu, that he had a son, Reuven, his oldest son, and according to the text, he had relations with... Jacob's concubine.
He really didn't. He just removed the.
All right. So we give an explanation, right? Right. But I'm not talking about. I'm talking. How does it look?
The simple reading.
Right. Okay. All right. So this is what they say to begin with. Okay.
He didn't do it.
Yeah.
It was a fly on the wall.
Masa, in connection with that. Okay. Amasa is a story by Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel. Sheholach lichvul. He went to a place by the name of Kvul. Vohoya korei chazan haknesses, and the shamas or the chazan in the shul, whatever you want to call him, he was reading from the Torah at that particular seder, right? And he read Vayehi bishkon Yisrael, right? And it came to pass that when Israel was encamped at that particular place, and then the next one is the story, you know, and within the same verse we read about Reuven and what he did with the Pelegish with Bilhah the and then it's a very peculiar thing. You have to see it in the Torah, okay, because all of a sudden there is a break in the text at that particular point. And normally when there's a break in the text, that's the end of a section. But it's not. Here we have what we call Taska Pesach Posuk. In other words, you have a break within the verse itself, so that the verse actually ends one story, there's a break, and then there's another story that begins all in the middle of the same, all in the same, very same verse. Because what happens after that? It's written by you, but Israel, Shnei Masor, and the children of Israel, the sons of Israel, were 12. So as you can see, first of all, it deals, you know, with a different thing, but at the same time, is Reuven counted among them?
Yes.
The answer is
that's
of course. Yes,
yeah.
Right. Okay. So what happened? What did this Rabbi Hanina Ben Gamliel say to the person who was about to translate the Yom HaLom Turgaman? So he said to the Turgaman, he said, Al Tetargem, do not translate it, okay? Elo Acharon, The only thing that you should translate is the last half, namely what? By Yubnei Yisrael, Shem Asa. That you can translate, but not the other one. V'shipchu chachomim. And when the sages heard about the action of Rabbi Gamliel ben Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel, they praised him for what he had done. Okay? All right. So, Maaseh Egel HaSheni, now, the second story of, the golden calf, or the second part of the story of the golden calf, to be more correct, right? Nikra v'lo mitarge is read and is not translated. So, now they want to know, what are we talking about? Eze Maaseh Egel HaSheni, what is it? So it says, min vayomim Moshe ad vayar Moshe. In other words, this is the section where Moses talks to Aaron, right? And he says, what happened? I mean, tell me, what did this people do to you that you went and you did some, and you led them all astray, and so on and so forth, and so on and so forth. And then, Vayah Moshe, and so on, and Moshe saw, how the people were hurrying around, they were dancing and committing all kinds of, presumably, bacchanalian rites or something like that.
Do it.
Right, okay. Right. So, that certainly reflects badly not only upon Aaron, but also reflects badly upon the Jewish people, right? So, therefore, that we do not translate. We read it, but we don't translate it, okay? Yes?
And why don't they talk about the story of Dina and the son? I mean, it doesn't say whether they translated or not.
They did. Yeah, that was translated, right. Yeah, it's not even listed over here. It's not even that.
No.
Well, but you have to remember, the brothers, even in spite of the fact that, their actions were criticized by Yaakov Avinu, but nevertheless, what is the rejoinder that they gave it to him? Achizona yases achizenu. Are they going to make our sister into a prostitute?
Right.
Treat her like a prostitute? So, in other words, they were defending the honor of their sister, you see. And therefore, they were defending the honor of the family as well.
Right.
So that therefore,
Jacob was afraid that they
right. Okay. Yes.
Refer somehow learning this and having this as a tradition.
Yeah.
Reflect in the attitude of the Jewish people about Gashan Gefadim,
Yeah. Well, this is how the rabbis are feeling right now.
Right.
But the Torah is very open. Tells not only the good things, but also tells about bad things as well, right?
Right.
Right.
You know, that the parents were always aware of the fact they
want to know. It's pastish, right. It's not right.
Yeah.
Ashad the Father Goyim.
Ashad the Father Goyim.
Yeah.
So that whole attitude really stems from this tradition.
Right.
So what they're saying here is that you should these passages should be read but not translated.
That is correct.
There are no passages that are not supposed to be read.
That they don't mention. Okay. We didn't come to it. Okay. All right. So we did that already. Okay. Now, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, he says, the Olam Yehi Adam Zohir B'Tshuvasov. It says, from this story about what Aaron said in answer to Moshe Rabbeinu, it says it teaches us an important lesson that a person should always be careful in how he answers a question. Shemitoch Tshuva Sheyeshivu Aharon to Moshe, because the answer that Aaron gave unto Moshe, Pakru Hamaharim. The people, who were questioning and were doing full of complaints against the leadership of Moshe and so on and so forth, were complaining about the validity of the Torah ideals and so on, they became epicorsim. Pakru means that they became epicorsim.
Who?
Pakru, the verb, means became epicorsim.
Okay?
Hamaharim, people, who felt, that they had a perfect excuse for worshiping the golden calf. That's who he means, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Those who were contesting the action of Moshe Rabbeinu, okay? obviously there were those who contested it, you know. He had a fight. Afterwards, we read, you know, that he asked the tribe of Levi, you know, that they volunteered to defend against those people who had led the whole business, and there was a battle in which people were killed. Okay?
And Moshe was not punished for breaking the tablets.
No. No. As a matter of fact, according to one statement, the Rabbeinu Shalem said a yashakeach to him, because he said he did right. Okay? At any rate, what was the answer that Aaron gave that would give rise to this? He said, to Moshe, he says, Vashidechehu bo'esh, right? I threw it, meaning, you know, I threw the gold into the fire, right? Aaron's answer would be that it wasn't me who did it, but it happened. This is what happened, right? And therefore, right.
He was stalling for time.
Right, right.
It wasn't a good answer.
Yeah. So that therefore we have to be very careful what we say, so that, you know, we don't, when we give answers to questions, mislead people, and particularly mislead them into heresy. You see, this is the point
on
that
the
they're
other
making,
hand, he didn't
right?
Want to accuse the people. He didn't want to speak evil of the people.
No, on the contrary, he says.
He says,
right? They pressured them. Aaron complained to Moses. He says, you know, they came, and, right? Did they complain, right? And they wanted. They sure they pressured, absolutely. Right. Yeah. Well, obviously, I mean, this is something that, according to, you know, certain midrashim, you know, people felt that this was it, you know. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, then it says, Birkos Kahanim, right? How about, you know, the bracha that the Kahanim give to the people of Israel, right? Yivarecha Hashem Yishmaecha, right? Yivarecha Hashem Panelecha Yichuneko, Yisra Hashem Panelecha Yisra Panelecha. It says, Nikrin. The Lomitargamid, they ought to be read, but not translated. Now the question is, why shouldn't they be translated? So he gives the answer, my Tama, he says, Bishum, Dichsiv Yisa, because that third sentence begins with the word Yisa, Rishem, Polavedacha. God will show favoritism unto you and grant you peace. And so, so what is the favoritism? So the answer is that the Goyim will say, why should God show favor to the Jewish people? Right? What's the matter with us? Why should he show favor to us? Why should he, you know, be prejudiced in favor of the people of Israel? So, of course, this leads to a statement that we have, the Gemara Brachos, that why did the Rabbeinu Shalom feel that the Jewish people deserved, you know, that it should be Yisod Hashem Polavelecha, right? That, you know, the God should raise his countenance unto the people of Israel, in other words, to show them favor, right? Because he says, look, when a person eats, right? He eats a little bit, right? He's not satisfied. A Jew, when he eats even a kezias, in other words, literally an olive size of food, and he makes a bracha and he thanks God for it. So, if they are willing to go that extra mile, why shouldn't I show favor unto them? So that's the story.
Now, the interesting thing is, in the connotation, when we hear the translation,
right,
show favor, we don't think of it as being
discrimination, right?
Discrimination,
right.
As to have blessings upon.
Correct. This is absolutely correct, right? But you know, the phrase, however, you know, does occur. In other contexts, in the sense, you know, that, you know, to show favoritism. There are other passages where it connotes that.
So it could
yeah,
be
right, right, right. So in order to avoid the misunderstanding, right. I mean, we always take it in the sense simply that may God, you know, grant you favor and give you peace and so on, right? We don't think about discrimination. But nevertheless, obviously, there were Goyim who felt that this was a sign that they were being discriminated against as compared to the Jewish people.
Nevertheless, the Christians use the same
blessing. Of course they do. They love these passages, right? They use it at the Leviathan, for example, they quote it.
They do it at weddings.
Weddings, I'm sure they do, right, yeah. Okay. Pardon me? Yeah, of course they're taking things from our scriptures. They're always doing that. Right. Psalms, they love to study. They love Psalms. Right. Yeah. Right. Right. All right. So Nagoy is a goy. Okay. Maasei David the Amnon. All right. And again, the story about David and Amnon. Okay. Lo nikvin velo mitargamin. This falls into the category of not to be read in public and not to be translated in public.
That's the one.
But didn't we have previously the statement and it said what? That the story of Amnon and Toma is read and is translated? I mean, we said that before. Right? We said why? Because, you know, the question was asked, well, you know, am I, if you remember, right? What if we say, you know, that it reflects bad upon David? So nevertheless, we said, no, you still do it. So here it's contradicted by a different teaching, okay? So the answer is, says, Lotasha, says, no, there's not a difficulty between these two opinions. Or Dixiv Amnon ben David, or Dixiv Amnon Stama. In other words, where they mention specifically Amnon, the son of David. So in that case, you know, we might feel that, you know, it reflects upon him. But on the other hand, where it simply says Amnon itself, so, no. Okay. At any rate.
Is that the ruling?
The ruling is we don't read it in public anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, you study it, but, you know, it's not a passage that you read in public, okay?
Yes, David's indiscretion with
Bathsheba,
that's a ruling. We didn't get there yet. Well, I don't know if that's part of it.
After
all, this is a reflection
on... Okay. We don't read as a Haftorah the story of how David managed to get Bathsheba's husband sent to the front where he was killed in battle, okay? Or the fact that David had committed adultery with Bathsheba. That, no, we don't read it in public. We study it, but we don't read it, okay.
Was there, right. was there a
child was born, right, and then the child died within a few days. Yeah, yeah, right. And he mourned for that child, right, okay. So, at any rate, that part we don't read. On the other hand, there are two Haftorahs which mention Bathsheba. Yeah, first of all, right. Vayikivu yamei David lamus, and so on and so forth, right. Right. Actually, the first one is Fabel David Zokin Bobayomim, and then the other one is Rosh Hashanah. Yeah, two of the Haftorahs that we read when we're doing Sefer Bereishis deal with Bathsheba and so on. Okay. Yeah, yes. That was Avshalom. Avshalom.
Or the other one.
The one that
it had
taken
before.
Okay, no, that's Adoniyahu.
Yeah.
Adoniyahu ben Chagir. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, incidentally, they used the mother's names in order to make sure. The father was David, but it was Adoniyahu ben Chagir, right, the son of Chagir, and so on, right, and Amnon happened to be the son of Abigail, and so on and so forth. Okay, yeah. All right. Okay, and of course, David was the son of Bathsheba. So he had different women. Right, right. Okay. Shlomo is the son of Bathsheba. Correct. Okay. All right. Now, here we come to dirty words that don't belong, that should not be read aloud.
Dirty words.
Okay? Because we should always use what kind of language? Lashon Nekiyah. Nice language. We learned that already from Parsha Noach, where, you know, the animals, who did he take in? He took animals who were clean, right? And he also took in animals which were not clean. He didn't say Tomei, but he used the word Shelot Tahora. Okay. So from this we learn that you should use nice language and not use bad language. Okay. But nevertheless, there are some bad words in the Bible. Okay. So therefore, we're going to read, what did they do? Okay.
Cover your ears.
Tana Rabbanan. Our sages taught us, Kol hamikros haksuv matero lignai kohenos haneshevach. In other words, whenever you have a passage in the Bible which, you know, where they use very bad language, so we have to use nicer language. Kigon, example. Okay, in the Tochacha we have the word Yishkolena. We don't read it. What do we read? We read Yishkolena. Okay, same area over there. It says Bat Poldim, and we read Bat Chorim. The first one, I have to tell you, Yishkolena, would seem to imply like the F word. Okay, so therefore we don't read it. Instead, we use the word Yishkolena, a lie with her. Okay, it's written Yishosel Reis. In other words, you will betroth a woman, and somebody else will go and lie with her, because, you know, it's a punishment upon the Teichacha, right?
Yeah.
But as I say, this is it's a rougher word, okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know they had
some. Well, they had a few. But we don't read them.
Change.
It's written, right. If you read in the text of the Torah, the word is Yishkolena, but when I read it, I have to read it as Yishkolena. The same thing, Ba'apolim, which is some kind of a very bad skin disease caused by rats and mice, and so, you know, they carry the germs that cause it. So we read and says bat chorim, in other words, with boils. Okay,
boils.
Right.
So
right. Okay. Then we have in the book of Kings, we find over there that we find a denunciation of the people of Israel on the part of the bad people, on the part of the enemies of the... okay? So we learn, first of all, in reference to... Yeah, Charyon. Okay. It says over there... Okay. It's written Charyonim, and we read instead Divyonim. All right. Now, of course, I have to tell you right now, Charyonim. So Rashi explains Chari. He says it's Loshen Rayi. In other words, it refers to feces. Feces. Okay. Feces. Okay. So it says, so instead of saying that, we should read it as Divyonim, which as Rashi explains, he says Divyonim, he says that means what the doves excrete. Okay. What doves excrete. So what the doves excrete doesn't sound as bad or as right, it's exactly, okay? Yes. Because the problem is they were suffering at that particular time from famine, so people were even ready to eat anything in order to keep right. So Rashi explains, he says, as Shalola Farei, she did not want to explain Sheho Yisrael Erchlin Gilalehen Mishomon, that the people of Israel, there's of course in this case it means the northern Israel who were Shomron, the capital city, which was besieged and suffering from famine, that they were eating their own excrement. Yes, but it doesn't say that they did that. It said on the other hand, of course, on that, you know, mothers were eating their own children and so on, right.
But this is just small stuff.
Yeah, right. And then a similar, we have Veilechos Chareihem, Vadishtosis Meimei Shineihem, which would mean that, you know, again, to eat the feces and to drink their... you know, the pishon, you know.
Yeah. Okay, right. Story told to me by somebody, the Russian soldiers, when they got the blood, which was very, very, very dry, that's what they did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Could happen, could happen.
To make it soft.
Yeah.
It's a folk remedy.
Uh-huh.
It cured something.
Yeah. Needless to say, I mean, that turns our stomach when we think about it, but, you know, when you're suffering from terrible famine, you never know what's going to happen. So they translated it instead to lecholis tsoason, to eat literally what they excrete, but it sounds nicer than the other one, because the other one is more like, the S word, you understand? You know, as I said, there's an F word, there's an S word. Neither of them we want to use, you see, okay? All right? And the lishtos has been brought them in that they had to drink the urine, okay? Huh? All right. Now, the same thing that the Avodah Zorah places will be turned into the machrois, which would mean, privies, right? Privies. Yeah, okay. I'm using a nice word. So, they translated, they changed the word to the mozos. Again, because the word you would say, obviously, something that leaves the body, so obviously, we can figure out what it stands for. Okay. Rabbi Shimon Kochoim there, the Machrois, Kishmon, he says, no, actually you should leave that word. You know, the houses, the S houses, okay? Don't change it. He says, but Neshu Ginaila, but it's Chechovim, because this is used in reference to say, that Avodah Zorah, idolatry, this is what it is, okay? Omer Rav Nachman said, "Kol leitzunusa asira." He says, "We should not use any kind of language which is not nice, bar with the exception meleitzusunus da'avedis kochim." When it comes to describing idolatry, there he says the shayah is permitted, to use, descriptions that are otherwise not correct. They're not nice. Okay. Dixiv, and he brings a passage from the book of Yeshayahu. The idol that was worshipped in Babylonia was Baal.
Baal,
right, okay. So, Yeshayahu condemns, of course, the idolatry, because, he says there's only one God, and none of the idols have any value or anything like that, and so on. And he gives the following description. He says, Karab Baal, Baal is crouching. Karas Nevo. Nevo is another idol, okay? Like in Nebuchadnezzar, it's actually, it's the same thing. Okay? So, and the other one is also, it's crouching. Uchsiv, Korsu, Koryachdov. All of them, they crouch and Lo Yochlu, Malet Masor. Literally, they cannot bring forth their burden. Now, what does he mean? We can understand what he means. Okay, they're crouching because they're suffering from the. They should take Xlox, right?
The story is the Michonot women and the Makib before after Bilam and before Terus.
Yeah.
Similar situation.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, you're talking about the how do we worship the ore.
That's right.
Right, yeah, that's what you're talking about. Right, right. Rabbi Yana Yom HaMehocha, he gave an example from the following. It's written, the Eglos Beis Oven Yoguru Shechen Shomron Ki Aval Olov Amo V'chmarav Olov Yagilu Al Kvodo Ki Golo Mimenu. Okay. This is a long pasuk that we have in the book of Hosea. And first of all, we have to understand what are the eglos base oven. So, eglos, in this particular case, happens to be the plural of the word eglo, not the heifers, by which he means, and now we have to go back again. What is Beis Oven, which means literally the house of sin, or something like that. So, in reality, this refers to the temple. Well, there are two temples that were put up by Yeravim ben Nevat, Jeroboam. Remember, he was the one who led the people of Israel to split from the kingdom that was ruled by Rehoboam, who was King Solomon's son, right? He broke off and made it into a separate kingdom. And then in order to prevent people from going into Yerushalayim, and so he built his own two temples, right? So one of them was located in Beit El. Yes, he set up golden calves. Set up golden calves and altars over there too. And the other one was in the northern Israel in Dan. Northern Israel in Dan. Right. Dan, actually, the tribe Dan went to two different areas. First, they settled around the coast. And we still have, the Tel Aviv area is still called Dan. Yeah, and also around where Beit Shemesh is. It's still really in the general area of Dan, okay? Shevet Dan. But then, because of the pressure of the Philistines, many of them left over there and they went to all the way up into the north of Israel and they created another Dan over there. So this is where he set up the northern temple. So he had a temple in the south because Beit El is not far from Yerushalayim. But it's already part of Shevet. It was close to Binyamin, but it's not Binyamin. Okay, it should be. Today they consider this part of Binyamin, but in those days they didn't. Okay. So what he's saying is that as far as those golden calves, right, of Beit Oven, right. So this is what the people who inhabit Shomron fear, right. But nevertheless, the people weep of them, and the priests will rejoice because of the fact that Kvodo Gigolim Imedo, the glory of these places will be departing from them, literally exile or departing from them. Okay, so in other words, what he's saying is that the temples that are dedicated someday are going to be destroyed, and the people of Israel who have been serving these golden calves in this place, right, they will be exiled and so on. This is what he's really predicting over there, okay? All right. But at any rate, you notice, what did they do? Instead of calling it Bethel, which means literally the house of God, he did not want to refer to it as Bethel. So what did he do? He changed it to Beit Oven. Beit Oven. Okay, the house of sin. Okay, so that was the change that he made. Okay, and then it says, "Al tikre kvodo ela kvedo." Do not read, "Its glory has departed," but kvedo. Again, literally, what is heavy within it is departing. And again, it's parallel, you know, to what we were reading in the previous verses that they quoted. Omer Rav Huna Baba Noach, Mishmeda Rav Acho, Bereda Rav Iko. So Rav Huna, the son of Monoach, in the name of Rav Acho, the son of Rav Iko, Shorilei Levar Yisrael, he gave permission to a Jew, Lameimor Leilo Ivet Kechovim, to say to an idolater, Shak Leilo Avedis Kechovim, take your idolatry, the Anche, the Shin Tav Shalom, and stick it in your Shin Tav.
No translation.
No, I have to translate. The Shin Tav means a buttock. Okay.
Buttock.
Yeah, they're still right. They're still talking nice. They're still talking nice, right? Chase. We find the expression for chasufei chase. In other words, with the buttock uncovered.
Yeah.
So this is what he's saying. Right, yeah. Take your rabbi to Zohar and stick it, you know where. Okay.
We got the
Well, I told you, I mean, tonight, oh boy.
This is X-rated. Yes. Tell your table and have more people.
Amar Rav Ashi, I think we'll finish this chapter and we'll call it a night. Rav Ashi said, Haiman the son of Shumane, if a person has a very bad reputation, then you can call him a Gimel Shin. So the question is, so what's a Gimel Shin? Okay. So according to Rashi, Gimel Shin, it says Bar Girta, which means you are the son of a Zona, in other words. Yeah. Right. You're a bastard, in other words, right? Okay, that's it. You're a bastard. So, but notice again, I mean, he could call him, he can insult him by calling him a Gimel Shin. Okay. Right. On the other hand, Haiman the Shapir Shimone, however, when a person has a fine reputation, Shore the Shabchuchei, then you should praise him. Right? Uman the Shapchei, the person who praises a person who, you know, is good and has a fine reputation, Yonuchuloi Brochus al Roshon, may blessings rest on his kepala. So with that, we come to the end. Hadra Dalach, Hakeris HaMegillah. Right. Tonight is the 23rd of October, the year 2002, and we are about to begin the fourth and the final chapter in Maseches Megillah, and this one is called B'nei Ha'ir. Why? Because it comes to the first two words that we have in the Mishnah. Okay. So, we shall begin right now. Does everybody have the place?
Yep.
Yes.
Good job,
but
he found it.
B'nei Ha'ir, Shalir, Lokchim B'damah Beis HaKnesses. Okay. First problem that we have to discuss, even before we start this, is what is going to be discussed in this first part of the fourth chapter. The answer is, we're dealing over here now with things which have holiness for one reason or another. But as we'll also see, there is also a ladder of holiness. Some things are more holy than others, okay? And so one of the problems that will arise, as we'll see in the next few minutes, arises when, let's say, a thing is no longer used for whatever reason it may be, and can you sell it? Or can you do anything to exchange it for anything else? And what can be done? Obviously, we are living in an age where, you know, we have lived in, let's say, cities like Springfield, New York, and so on. I mean, when I first came to Springfield, you know, a little over 45 years ago, there were four shuls up in the North End. Now, needless to say that in the course of time, all of those shuls have disappeared. So the question is, you know, what could be done with those shuls? And, you know, because after all, they had holiness, and all of a sudden they no longer have any holiness.
Some of them have become churches.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. That happened to Beth Israel became, okay, and it happened also to the Russisch Shul, right.
And then the other shul.
Yeah, right. Congress Street shul. Yeah.
That was knocked down.
Yeah, that was Kesser Israel.
Kesser was also
now some of them, right, some of them of course came to this area, as we know. I mean, Beth Israel relocated in Long Meadow. Kesser bought the Kadima building
on Oakland.
B'nai Jacob, they built a new shul over there in Long Meadow, which was supposed to be an Orthodox shul, but eventually, not too short a time, became a conservative shul. So, this is the story over there. So, we see that, you know, something like that happened even in olden times when perhaps areas moved or whatever it may be, and you know, so the question is, what could they do with it? Also, can you, for example, sell something of lesser holiness and purchase something of greater holiness with it? And as we'll see, the general principle over here is that you can go up in holiness, but You cannot go down in holiness when it comes to these things.
Do you know?
Yes, I believe so.
Does it also tell you who you can sell it to?
No, here it's not mentioned over here. That already would be part of the business, you know, that the commentators, not our commentators over here, but I'm talking about, let's say, in Shabbos and Shubbos, you know, when the question was raised to various rabbis, so, you know, then they would give their own opinion as to whether it's permissible or it's not permissible.
Like responsa?
Yeah.
Like questions would be asked?
Yeah, right. So what I mean by Shabbos and Shubbos, that's responsa, right. You ask questions of noted authority, and he gives you an answer. So, yes. Well, the normative one would be that you try to get the best price that you can, and this is particularly so if you can do something else with it, you know, to make it holy. Let's say to sell this shul and establish a new shul, okay? Because even in those days, let's say maybe a shul fell into disrepair or something like that, and in the meantime, they would build a new shul in anticipation of the fact. So then could they sell the old property? You see, this is a part of the problem that is raised in this particular chapter.
In the old days,
yes.
That I can remember, they started in housing. There were like two-family houses.
Yeah.
Originally, that was the property.
Right.
But for years, they established a synagogue. But I would say if they moved out of there, it had the basis as originally a two-family house.
Okay. As a matter of fact, we'll see that something along these lines will be discussed over here. In other words, a distinction which is made, we'll see that they are going to make a distinction between a shul, for example, which is the private property of a person, as compared to a shul which belongs to a community. Okay? Now, the first one that you're talking about, generally speaking, that was a shul which was private property of someone. So that's the different category.
It's
right.
Like the shivalach that they had in New
York.
Yes. The original Grays Avenue shul. You're familiar with the Grays Avenue
That was the granddaddy of Schultz and Springfield.
The granddaddy of the Bethesda.
Right, yeah. Right.
Before my time.
It's behind the Jewish newspaper building.
No, that's long gone.
That's where it is. That's
the area.
That's
where
it goes.
Grays Avenue.
Yeah.
That's
long gone. There were streets that have disappeared from Springfield. I remember when we came into Springfield, it used to be busy. You would go on a Thursday night downtown. I'm talking even, not of ferries, I'm talking about, for example, Broadway. Yeah. Where is there Broadway in Springfield today? Right, yeah. Remember, it used to be crowded with people. I mean, downtown once upon a time was a very lively place here in Springfield. All right, so the Mishnah now. Okay, Arthur, thank you. The Mishnah begins with B'nei Ha'ir Shemachru Rechiv Shalir. All right, first item which is discussed is a public place, meaning like a square or something like that, right? And it belonged to the general community. Okay, so the Mishnah says that B'nei Ha'ir, the people who live in the city, who decided, you know, to sell this public square belonging to the city, then in that case they can use the money, lokim midamav, literally they can buy with its money, beis hakneses, they can buy a shul with it. Okay, that's fine. Now how about selling a shul, what can you do with that? Beis hakneses, lokim teva, if you sell a shul, then you're allowed to buy an Oren Kodesh with it. The teva over here means the Oren Kodesh, okay? Teva, if you sell an Oren Kodesh, then like mit b'chais, then in that case you can buy the wrappings around the Torah, okay? Of course, we're used now to mentalach and so on. If you've ever seen the Sfardim, you know they have different things. They have like a box which is covered over with velvet and
gold.
And instead of reading it the way we do, where we put it on the table, you know, they stand it up and they read that way, right? So it's a different custom altogether, but many of them are very, very elaborate, very beautiful. So, obviously, as we see so far, what? the public square has a certain amount of Kedusha in it. What the Kedusha is, we'll have to discover, because that's what the Gemara is going to discuss for a moment, okay? And a shul, we certainly know, is a holy place that has Kedusha, right? And Oren Kodesh has even more Kedusha, because why? We house the Sefer Torah in it, okay? And the Mitbachos, this is wrapped directly around the Sefer Torah, so that therefore it's considered to have more holiness than the Oren Kodesh itself. All right, and we continue now on the next page. Oh wait, where it says, actually, there's one word left on the previous one, Mitbachos, and how about the wrappings around the Sefer Torah? So Yichud Sefarim, you can buy, here it doesn't mean books, but what it means is you can buy, you know, remember I told you that they used to write, you know, years, thousands of years ago, they would write the words, let's say, the rest of what we call the Vayim Ksuvim, in other words, anything except for the Torah part itself, the rest of the Bible, they would write it on individual scrolls, or maybe one big scroll, in which they had this, that, and so on, okay? And I told you that even to this very day, there are some places where they read the Haftorah from scrolls, actually. Yeah. Instead of reading it as we do from the Chumash, they read it from the scroll, okay? And of course we know, I mean, that Megillas Esther is read from the scroll, right? But there are also places where they read the other four Megillas also from the individual scrolls, okay? So that we have here in our own Kodesh over here, not in very good condition, but we have, for example, a scroll in the Book of Ruth, and I think, if I remember correctly, another one called Helis, if I'm not mistaken. So,
is there any greater sanctity involved
in reading it? From the scroll? Yes.
There are rules like reading from the Torah, then.
Yes. First of all, you would have to memorize the text. That's obvious. Yeah. This is why usually whoever reads the Torah will also read the Haftorah, although they give the honor to saying the brachas to somebody, okay? So that person has mafta, but what he does is to recite the brachas before and after. However, when it comes to reading the Haftorah itself, usually it's the Baal Kriya who does it, okay?
If they're reading from a scroll,
right. Yeah, because you have to remember the words, you have to remember the notes, you know. The trap, right. So then we see over here that if you sell your mitbachos, the wrappings of the around the Sefer Torah, then you are permitted to buy scrolls for the prophets and for the holy writings, the Vayim Ksuvim. And if you want to sell them, then it says for him, right? Lokin Torah. In that case, you can buy, sell it, and use the money in order to buy a Torah. Aval, however, now we don't go down the scale of holiness. In other words, if you sell a Sefer Torah, then you are not allowed to buy, you know, the scrolls of the Ksum or the Nevi'im. It's for him. If you sell them, then you are not allowed to buy the coverings for the Sefer Torah. Mitpochos leichul teva. With the sale of the mitpochos, of the coverings, you're not allowed to buy an Oren Kodesh. Teva, if you sell an Oren Kodesh, leichul beis knesses. Then you're not allowed to take the money and buy a shul. Beis knesses, if you sell a shul, leichul es horachov. And in that particular case, if you sell the shul, you're not allowed to buy a rechov, you know, a public square, all right?
Well, they're going to go up the line, now they're coming down the line.
Right, yeah, well, coming down the line. Yeah, yeah. In other words, you cannot sell something with greater holiness in order to purchase something of lesser holiness. Right. This is what the point that they're making. The opposite, as we said.
Right.
You could sell something of lesser holiness and buy something of more, greater holiness, but not the opposite, okay? They don't mention it over here, but we do have a principle that we've had several other times, and that is Malin Makodesh V'yei Morin, right? You're permitted to go higher and higher in holiness, but don't go lower and lower. Okay.
What is the, touching the printing of the Torah? Now, you have a
appointed, right?
Appointed.
Right.
You not touch it with your hands?
You're not supposed to.
You're
not supposed to. Consider that, you know, you're not acting with the proper sense of holiness if you do that, right?
Doesn't it also preserve the actual ink?
Yes, it helps. It helps.
The oils, you don't have the oils of the skin.
Yeah.
But in the parchment, you don't touch the parchment.
Right, right. Sometimes you can't help it, you have to, but there's another rule, right?
Oh, they use
the
they use
right.
Right.
All right. And then the last two words of the Mishnah, the Chain Bemosrehen, which means, and if you have any guilt left over, then in that case, again, you cannot buy something of lesser holiness. Okay. So far, this is what the Mishnah had to say. Okay?
Can one use this money for mitzvah? Let's say for a child price.
It's an important mitzvah. As we say, when it comes to the bris of Shalom, the word bris is mentioned 13 times in that passage. So that, therefore, there's tremendous emphasis placed upon the importance of a bris. So, in that case, there might be considered, you know, at least, if not of greater importance, maybe of equal importance or something like that. Okay?
Why 13 times? Because
yeah.
We keep our mitzvah 13 years. Right?
Okay, very good. Right, okay. All right. We'll take a look at the Rashi, which of course explains a little bit some of these things, and then some of Rashi's comments. It says, Menehu here. Okay, why do we say that there is a certain amount of holiness? Why do we say Yesh Bo Kedusha? There is a holiness in it. So he says, before the Gemara, is going to say, and we'll see in a few moments when we start the Gemara, that they explain what? Because we daven in the public square when we have public fast days. They also go about mothers, but the Tosfos says that it's not correct. Okay.
Didn't they also do the readings in the public squares, like Monday and Thursday?
No, the shul is a noble rule.
But in the old days when they went to the market, I'm talking way, way back.
No, but
the
they still went into a shul.
They went into a shul.
They went into the shul to do it. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
Oh, they did it on market days, but they did it in
that is correct. Oh, okay. Right. On market days they read. Exactly, right.
They only read in the square when it was a fast day.
Right.
They
on the fast day,
the
when things were very, very bad, and no rain had fallen for ever so long, this is what we learned in the Gemara in Tainus, so in that particular case, you had a whole series of fasts, and when it got very severe, then they would take the Sefer Torah out of the shul. They would take it out of the ark, out of the Ohel Kodesh. They would read it in the public squares in order to try to get as many people as possible. And the Rav or Chachamim would get up and they would speak Divrei Kibushim. In other words, they would tell people that they should do tshuva and things like that. And blowing in the shofar and all kinds of different things that they did in the hope, you know, that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam would grant rain. Okay, so in the case of very severe drought, that's what they did. Okay, so that is the reason why there is some holiness in there, because it was used on those occasions. Okay, then the next comment of Rashi at the top of the page, Lokan Svarim, explains what do we mean by Svarim. It doesn't mean books, but it means Nevi'im Uksuvim. Okay. Avo Mochu Torah says, Shemali Bakarusti Rashi says the same principle that I said before, Balaam HaKadosh from the reading, that you go up in holiness but not down. And then he says, Tosefta, in the Tosefta, we comment on this last idea, that Balaam HaKadosh, Desir, how do we know? So they bring a pasuk, it's written by Yochem Moshe as HaMishkan. Moshe literally raised up the tabernacle. Okay, and Rashi continues and he says, Bezalel also, right? Bezalel did the actual work, right? Moshe, but Moshe, who was greater than he, was more important than Bezalel even, Hakimo, he's the one who had the honor, if you wish, you know, of raising the tabernacle. Below Moridin, and how about the other part of the statement says that you don't go down in holiness? This year, we find, Es Machtos HaChatoyim Ho'ele V'Nashay Zom, that when we take, this is the story of Korach, that after Korach was punished, if you remember that he and his followers, they brought censers with incense in it, okay? So these were the machtos. So he says, the machtos of these sinners, he says, who sinned in their souls, we also assum Riki Pachim Tzipui LaMizbeach, right? They used them in order to make a covering and a decoration for the altar. Because when they, when these censers were used, brought near unto the altar, then in that case it became sacred. So in other words, we see over here, right, that in connection with the Beis HaMikdash and so on, that things, you can raise holiness, right, which means, okay, once they became sacred, then you could not...